We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
What's up, y'all? It's Drewski, and I've teamed up with Mountain Dew to produce a hilarious new basketball podcast called The Dew Zone with Drewski. Learn the backstories of your favorite ballers and celebrities like Jamal Murray.
Did you have like a favorite team? Was it the Raptors at the time or no? Was the Raptors even started around that time?
Come on, bro.
I ain't that old, fam. You're talking like I'm 50.
Taylor Rooks, Asia Wilson, and many more. You won't want to miss this. Listen to The Dew Zone with Drewski on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you listen to podcasts.
This is Darius Miller.
This is Drew Hardy.
This is Lance Thomas, Tyree Gavin.
Jason Smith.
Anthony Davis of the New Orleans Pelicans.
You're listening to.
And you are listening to In the Know.
In the Know.
The Bourbon Street Shots.
Bourbon Street Shots podcast.
All Pelicans, all the time.
Welcome to the show. Free agency is right around the corner. We had a boring draft night, but I'm thinking that free agency is going to be a whole different animal. Michael, are you looking forward to free agency opening up?
Ryan, it's happening again.
What?
I'm starting to believe Eric Gordon could be traded. You're going to have to spend this podcast talking me down and being the realist. It always happens when we get to the off season, close to the trade deadline. I start to believe, and now maybe more than ever. So yeah, I'm excited about it, but man, I can't believe how much I'm starting to believe against all of my own logic.
It is kind of fun to look around the league and realize, you know, we're not the only ones with crap. So, you know, it's always possible to trade crap for crap, right?
Yeah, I mean that's the whole always. I mean, and you know, there are eventually the musical chairs are going to have to stop, and teams are going to have to say, all right, do I overpay this free agent for 4 years or don't get anybody who could really move the needle or take a shot on this guy Gordon who might be gone in one and at most, I got to pay for two and has some upside. So it's going to be interesting. I mean, there's going to be, you know, as I pointed out in the article, something's going to go down. There's no way to avoid either Gordon, Rivers or Anderson being traded, so there's another shoe to drop here, and there's gonna be some fireworks in the next couple of days to at the very most 11 to 12 days. I mean, something major will get done by or before July 9th.
All right, so but before we start talking about possibilities on the Eric Gordon trade front and maybe other people who we should be talking about still, let's bore the hell out of everybody who's listening to this podcast, because there's some important ground rules here. Everybody should know if they're talking about, oh, we should go get this guy or do that. Yeah, this stuff is important because Dell can't just go out, grab Asik and or Asik. See, I'm already screwing up his name. This is going to be embarrassing for like a whole year. It's like I always used to call Darren Williams Duran. I did it for probably 3 years. So
can you say his first name?
Omer?
Omer? Okay. Close enough.
Whatever. the big dude. So the first thing is they can't bring in Omer Asik into cap space. So if they clear all sort of cap space and then they bring him into that cap space, and we'll talk about whether it's even possible to do that, our entire tournament, the mid-level tournament that we've been having on our site that everybody's enjoyed reading so much, that's pretty much out the window, correct?
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to bore people to tears, but honestly, if you're an NBA fan, it's to the point where it would behoove you to spend at least some time, not as much time, but at least some time understanding the CBA, because with all the transactions that happen in this league, it's almost as important as understanding the game on the court. So I'll try to not make this too dry, but I really think people need to understand. I mean, first of all, there's seven Pelicans under contract right now for a little over $54 million. Now, the projected cap is a little over 63, but we still haven't gotten that number yet. So people would say, well, Ashik's deal is for about $8.4 million. We could just absorb him into that cap space, and there's no issue. But that's just simply not true. For empty roster spots, there are cap holds that are around $500,000 each. Long story short, the Pelicans can't just bring Ashik into their cap space. And even if they were to dump Ajinsa, who is the seventh guaranteed contract after the finishing five in Austin Rivers, they would still be about close to $1 million short. So the bottom line is they are going to have to trade one of the finishing five or Austin Rivers. They could obviously also trade multiple ones of those. But that's somewhere where we could get started. And to answer your question about the mid-level, the easiest way to figure this out is that if the Pelicans use cap room, they cannot use the mid-level exception. So if the plan is to absorb Omer Ashik into cap room, then yes, they lose the mid-level exception. They lose the biannual exception. They would also lose bird rights to all of their free agents. We're talking about Roberts, Miller, Smith, Aminu. And all they would have to fill out the roster is minimum roster exceptions and a room level exception, which is about $2.8 million. So long story short, I cannot see a scenario in which Dell clears more cap room just to absorb Ashik and then essentially wipes away all of those other things that I've mentioned.
So you don't think it's at all possible that he's going to ship out one guy, maybe get back another player, but have enough of a reduction in cap space or increase in cap space, actually, bring a seek into that and then fill out the rest of the roster with mid-tier guys?
Well, it wouldn't be mid-tier. It would be minimum level.
So I'm sorry. Yeah, right. Minimum guys. He'd be able to offer one contract to a guy about somewhere up to $2.8 million, and then basically minimum level guys like he finds off in Europe like he did all last year.
I can't. I mean, you listen to Dell's press conference after the draft, which we do have to talk a little about here. I know that free agency is much more exciting, but we did get, I think, two players in this draft. But no, to answer your question, you just dump Rivers. Let's say you just send him to a team, completely dump him, then you could absorb Ashik. Now you're looking at having seven people under contract, the finishing five, Ashik and Ajinsa. And, you know, okay, Russ Smith, Patrick Young, that brings you up to nine. But like I said, you also lose all of those bird rights. So, I mean, I guess maybe you could bring back Darius Miller and Luke Babbitt for the minimum. You're probably going to lose Withy in that scenario. And then you're adding a $2.8 million. I mean, you got to fill that starting small forward slot. Maybe you could add a Richard Jefferson. But when Dell says we're going to be aggressive and, you know, obviously they're going to try to make a big jump this year, I can't imagine that means we're going to get rid of everybody and add Richard Jefferson.
Right. Yeah. No, I don't disagree. So let's go ahead and talk about what else he could do. So he has this deal, and obviously, I mean, here's the thing. Like, the Pelicans haven't officially announced this deal. So this is just, you know, it's gotten out there. Sources say the Pelicans are trading for Ashik through, you know, getting cap space. That's probably what's going to happen. But there could be other small pieces there that nobody knows about, i.e. other teams can be involved, i.e. we could be sending back $1 million or $2 worth of salary. So what could they do? Like, if they wanted to be able to maintain using their mid-level exception, so a deal that's worth about $5 million, and their other exception that's about, I think, was it 2.1?
2.1, and I wouldn't discount all the bird rights.
And all the bird rights. So Jay's bringing back Jason Smith, Darius Miller, Withy, all those guys.
Not even bringing them back, but, you know, the Clippers have interest. Let's say the Clippers have interest in Al-Farouq Aminu. You could sign and trade him for Jared Dudley or Matt Barnes. You know, same with Jay. Like, the ability to sign and trade those guys, I think, would be valuable as well.
Right. So what do you think is likely that they could do?
Okay, so there's really two main options. One of these options involves a team to become a team in a three-team trade with the Pelicans and Rockets. Personally, I believe that Dell negotiated this trade with the Rockets and said, okay, this will be the trade, but, you know, as a gentleman's agreement, you've got to allow us to attach a third team to help make things work. Houston, you won't have to take back any salaries. You won't have to do anything. We'll just submit it to the league as a third team trade. If that is the case, what the Pelicans would have to do is send out a minimum of $5.52 million in order to execute what's basically the rule of making salaries come within 150% of each other for a trade to work. So right now we have Ashik coming to the Pelicans. We have the Pelicans, you know, sending out a first round pick. If the Pelicans want to keep all their bird rights, if they want to keep, the mid-level exception biannual, they're going to have to send out $5.52 million to that third team and take nothing back. So this could work if they send out Rivers, Ajinsa, and then the quote-unquote, I keep using this, fake contracts of Melvin Eli and Luke Babbitt, which the other team could just basically cut and not have any salary cap repercussions. So that's one option. And it's not just, you know, sending out $5.52 million. I mean, if you send out somebody like Eric Gordon, you could send out Eric Gordon in this hypothetical three-team trade and take back as much as $12.8 million. Right. To still, I mean, I could go through all the numbers, but basically at that level, you just have to be within $5 million of salary. So whatever, those are the two key numbers to remember. Either they could just send out $5.52 million to another team, or if it's Gordon that they send out to another team, they could take Ashik and up to $12.8 million in salary to make it legal. The other option is they do a trade with somebody else completely separate from this Rockets trade, a team with cap room or a trade exception themselves. And if the Pelicans give up, you know, $8.4 million more than they take back, they will get this large trade exception. They just turn right back around and absorb Ashik into that trade exception, keep all the bird rights, keep all the MLE and the biannual, whatever. So those are the options of essentially how to keep all of these other assets and be able to execute this trade with Ashik.
Right. So, in essence, the Pelicans really have to have another trade up the sleeve. And that's what we're going to be looking for in this, once the free agent market opens up. And one of the things there is, like, part of the reason, if it was an established trade and all the parties were under contract, I have a feeling we might already know what that's going to be. Like, if it was going to be straight up, you know, Ryan Anderson being sent to Charlotte for Gerald Henderson and a couple other players, and that's going to give us enough space, or something along those lines. If all those players were under contract, I have a feeling we'd already know about this trade. What I think is actually waiting in the wings, that what hasn't happened yet, is some team has contact, one of the teams on either side of this piece, this bit of trade, has a guy who's got to be part of a sign-and-trade. So something like, you know, the team that we're trading to, they're not really interested in anybody that we're putting on the table, except they want Austin Rivers, and maybe they want Jason Smith or Alfredo Camino. And they're like, okay, we'll take Rivers and we'll take, you know, a re-signed Jason Smith at $3 million a year. So the Pelicans are able to do that. They could do the sign, they could do a trade, they can combine it, they can send it, and then be able to bring back whatever they need to be able to have that trade exception. So that's what I'm thinking is going to happen, which I think is going to take a little bit of time. I don't think this is going to be something that's going to happen within, you know, the first night or first couple days that information is going to come out, but I expect it'll be not too long. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's perfectly legit. You say Smith, I could see Aminu being that same thing. I said $5.5 million they send out. You take Austin Rivers and a re-signed Al-Farouq Aminu for $3.1 million in that first year, package them together to that third team who has the space to absorb them. Boom, it's a done deal right there. I guess my only thing is, you know, I've gotten this question a little bit of, well, if the Pelicans don't find this trade, could they just back out? I don't think that's an option. That would blackball you across the league. If you agreed to a trade and then couldn't find the way to make it work, and then you just went back and said, oh, sorry, we're not going to do this. I mean, there's nothing illegal about it because it hasn't been submitted. But good luck trying to get other teams to negotiate with you in good faith in the future. So that's just not a possibility. And with that not being a possibility, I've got to believe that Dell has a couple of fail-safes in the back pocket of stuff that's not only, oh, we'd be interested, call us back, but yes, we will do that. And if that's the case, how can those teams say, yes, we will do that, and then just wait on us while we explore everything else once July 1st hits, and just be sitting there twiddling their thumbs waiting for Dell to get back? I tend to think it happens a little faster than you do, just because I can't see the scenario in which the team says, yeah, we promise that we'll do that, and then just sits there and, you know, lets the cap space that they would need to absorb that go unused, not knowing if Dell's going to give them those guys.
It's possible. But in order for that to have happen, and I guess there are wink, wink, nod, nod deals that happen all the time in the NBA, but in order for that to happen, like, they have to have those players ready for the sign and trade and already agreed to them, really. Like, because that whole thing where, you know, first trading Jason Smith to Charlotte or whatever, Jason Smith has to agree to that. We can't sign and trade a player against their will. They have to agree to the sign and trade. So, I don't know. It's possible that they've already talked to all the people they need to, and they have it all lined up.
Yeah, I don't know if they have the trade lined up. I think they have an in-case-of-emergency break glass that is going nowhere. And the interesting in-case-of-emergency break glass is, if Dell talked to Benson and Loomis and was like, look, I'm going to be real aggressive trying to find something, but in order to agree to this Ashik trade, you know, if I don't find anything, will you guys grant me the permission to work on a buyout with Eric Gordon and stretch him? I mean, that, to me, if he has the green light to do that, he could go out and spend every single day up until June 9th looking for something that's perfect, and doesn't find it, if he doesn't find it, have that in his back pocket. So that's, you know, that's what I'm curious about, is what is his in case of emergency break glass? Because you can't just go back to Houston and say, you know, we can't do this trade, and you can't agree to that trade with Houston if, you know, you don't have an exit plan. So I tend to think it'll happen a little earlier, and it only doesn't if he does have an emergency, you know, break glass, something in his back pocket.
You really want this, like, you really like the idea of talking about stretching Eric Gordon, don't you?
So, I mean, when you look at the on-off splits, when you look at how much worse this team was with Eric Gordon, to me it's not even a contract issue anymore. I find it hard to say that this team is in any way better with Eric Gordon in any form. So, yeah, if push comes to shove and I've got to choose between trading Ryan Anderson, Austin Rivers, and Gordon, or stretching Eric Gordon just to, you know, eat dead money just to get him off the roster, I'm definitely not arguing for Ryan Anderson. To me, the argument becomes, what's the lesser of two evils, dumping Austin Rivers for nothing or eating dead money with Eric Gordon? I think you could really have a good debate with those two things.
Okay. So just so people are aware, there's a couple different ways you can stretch Eric Gordon. Some of them, you could do a buyout. You could just straight out stretch him. Because he has got 2 years in his contract, you could basically get him out to stretch him out to four. But if you work out a buyout, there's ways you can get him out to 5 years, correct?
Well, yeah, I mean, it's two times what he has left plus one. So, yeah, you would stretch the dead money out over 5 years.
Okay. So that basically means that you take his, $32 million left on that contract?
$30.4 million, I believe, but that could be negotiated. I mean, Eric, you know, we could go to Eric Gordon and say, how bad do you want your freedom? How much do you think you could make elsewhere? You know, we'll give you $20 million just to go away, and you could go try to earn back the other 10 somewhere else and be a true free agent for the first time in your career, which I don't know if people realize how much, you know, players value that. I mean, Eric Gordon was kind of a free agent, but he was restricted. You know, these guys like being wined and dined and coveted, and he probably in his mind thinks he would be. So, you know, you could negotiate a buyout. Let's say it's $20 million. Stretch that over 5 years, that's a lot less harmful. Plus, whatever he signs for, about half of that is going to come off the $20 million. You could be looking at, you know, somewhere between $12 and $15 million that you owe him stretched over 5 years. I'll take that over owing him $30.4 over two.
Right. Yep. So, and that's one of the things that's important to understand about the stretch provision. Right. If he signs somewhere else, some portion of the money that he signs for comes off of what you owe.
Yeah, it's about half. Basically, what he signs for minus the league minimum, which is 1.1 divided by 2. So quick math, let's say he signs for $10 million a year minus 1.1, that brings you to 8.9 divided by 2. That would take $4.5 million per year off of what we owe him. So
you're so good at math. It's almost like you're a teacher.
Never. I don't believe that's going to be done. One, I believe it's too hard for human beings to make a mistake like that. I think if another GM had given Eric Gordon that contract, it would be possible. I think it's real hard for Dell to stretch him and just straight up admit a mistake that big. And then we have no evidence that, you know, Benson would be willing to eat dead money. In fact, numerous Saints fans have told me that he does, you know, there's nothing he hates more than be paying a guy and have, you know, that guy on another team trying to beat him. So I don't know how realistic of an option that is, but it's one that you got to throw out there.
Right. Okay, so is there any more bits and pieces about, like, the moving money and the contracts and all that that you want to talk about? Or should we move on to more exciting things?
Any other thing? I mean, just one, I hear a lot, the luxury tax is projected to be about $77 million this year. There's no way we could really get into that. I think I pretty much ran through most of the numbers and all that dry stuff. The only, I guess we'll get to a sheik later. So no, on this, no, nothing else to really.
Okay. Now let's first, before we go to anything else, talk about, we didn't have a draft night podcast because I'll be honest. Like, as far as draft goes and the events that happen, like, the run-up to that was about 100% more interesting than what actually happened on the night. Like even, like, the people, like, the biggest exciting moment was Gary Harris slid from 13 to 19. Woo-hoo! I mean, really, there was nothing in that draft that made me, like, there wasn't any really unexpected picks up at the top. There wasn't any real slides that have real any impact overall. I mean, people are talking about Denver a big winner because they got guys who slipped like three or four spots, six in the case of Gary. I mean, come on. Really?
Yeah, I will say this, though. Is this a product of us having a ton of information? I mean, I imagine if this draft had happened 20 years ago, before Draft Express, before Twitter, before Hoops Hype and all the rumor links or whatever, I think it could have been shocking. I mean, knowing a guy like Embiid with an injury like that going third, we probably wouldn't know who Dario Saric is. And, you know, we wouldn't know, I mean, why is Shabazz Napier dropping so far? He was a good player in college. You know, I think we tend to underappreciate how much access we have to information. I mean, I remember the first draft I was really obsessed with was the Duncan draft, which was, what, 97? What was
Yeah,
with Duncan and Van Horn. I had a beeper, and my friend would beat me the pick number. Like, I was working. He beat me the pick number, and then the college number of the player who got it. So it was like I had to try to figure out I don't remember who was in that draft. I just remember that Duncan and Van Horn were like the two superstars. Like,
yeah, was it, weren't Billups and Ron Mercer, yeah, I think Billups, was in there.
Ron Mercer, that's right, because Boston had 3 and 6. But I'm just saying, like, I knew Van Horn because he had a great run in that tournament. I had no clue who Chauncey Billups was. I just, you know, might have saw a mock draft in my Sunday paper that had this guy, but I agree that there was no drama and surprise, but, you know, it's really because as contrary and how little we say it, we just have access to so much great information and, you know, so much, you know, inside knowledge. So I don't know.
Yeah, I honestly know where you're going with that. Like, if you look at, like, what Draft Express and what Chad Ford's Big Board and you know, NBA Draft.net have, in general, if you, like, take the consensus across those, you've got a pretty good idea where everybody's going to go in general. Like I said, you might slip three, four spots, but that's all we're talking. But I expected trades. I mean, with all the talking and all the people who were not getting exactly what they wanted out of this draft and or really wanted to move here, I expected there to be some sort of trades, and there's, what, three?
Yeah, I mean, main one. Did you happen to watch the Grantland video with the Sacramento Kings crowdsourcing?
I did, yeah.
Oh, my God. Like, couldn't you have watched, like, 8 hours of that?
Yeah.
That was amazing. But, you know, just to see, and after they draft Stauskas, all I kept thinking about was the meeting that Vivek had with Mike Malone, where he's like, if you get me shooting, Rudy Gay and DeMarcus Cousins are that much better. Yeah, good luck with that.
Right.
But I mean, I thought that was fascinating. But you see how, you know, people start to talk themselves into things, and then, yeah, the idea of a trade is, well, we could get a known commodity. But then you see in that video, they're like, well, why not just take a chance on the guy with the highest upside, you know, try to hit home run. And it's, you know, this trades, I think teams talk, but they just talk themselves into the unknown and fall in love with the idea of it.
Yeah. So you brought up Sacramento. I got to say, there was a trade talked about, like, I guess a week or two ago that made more sense to me. I mean, the trade where they were actually talking about acquiring Josh Smith for Sacramento. And I mean, I'm not even saying it like in terms of Josh Smith's the head case and so is DeMarcus Cousins, so let's stick these guys together and it'll be and hilarity will ensue. I honestly, Josh Smith and DeMarcus Cousins as a front court pair, it actually makes sense. they would be pretty good together, I think.
How does that front court scare you in the new NBA where shooting is paramount, though?
I think that is so oversold and overrated. I really do. I'm sorry. We've had a couple finals where people are like, oh, well, now you have to have four players out and one player in. I mean, we can say that, but it's not actually true. You just have to have two skilled big men who can actually score inside. And that whole story's, like, completely crap.
I guess if you trust them to do that, I see Josh Smith, the guy who loves his jumper, and DeMarcus Cousins, who, you know, thinks he has point guard still. So, okay, I guess I'll say this. If I'm playing NBA 2K, I agree. I like that front line because I can make those guys do what I want them to do.
Well, so let me go a little bit further. First, Sacramento was giving up garbage in the trade that was reported. I mean, they weren't giving anything back to Detroit except for cap relief, essentially, and shorter contracts or smaller contracts that ran the same length so they'd be easier to move. But, you know, if I'm sitting there and I'm Sacramento, I mean, that is an upgrade to my roster. There's not really any way to look at it. And I'll be honest, if I'm banking my team is going to, you know, go and reach the playoffs on the back of DeMarcus Cousins, well, I'm already in such a fantasy land that it doesn't really matter. So, you know, bringing in Josh Smith to help give me some defense and some nice passing and some cool dunks next to DeMarcus Cousins and Rudy Gay, who has opted in, and I mean, it makes sense to me.
Oh, don't think I do not have a trade idea that centers around Eric Gordon going to Detroit and Josh Smith going to Sacramento. Don't think I don't have this.
Okay.
I thought the draft was interesting. Obviously, we got into it just at the point where it looked like it was a lost cause. I mean, I thought they were going to rename the second round draft the small forward draft.
Right.
Because just literally, like, you know, my wife was sitting there watching the second round with me, and she's, you know, for like six straight picks, she was saying, oh, didn't you like that guy? Oh, didn't you like that guy? You know, just knowing, I mean, we had Inglis go off the board. We had Early go off
first,
the board.
First thing, Inglis went off the board.
Yeah, then KJ McDaniels right after him. And,
yeah.
We had Early go off at 34, and we had DeAndre Daniels. So it was just small forward, small forward, small forward. Looked like, you know, there was nobody left for the Pelicans. They don't get back in it. And then, you know, we hear a trade of Pierre Jackson's rights, ironically, going back to Philadelphia for the rights of Russ Smith. And I don't think we pound our own chest on our podcast enough. I mean, this is the podcast. We predicted the Chris Paul to Clippers trade way before it happened. We, you know, called trying to think of some of the other things, but
that's it.
I had three big ones today. I'm kind of blanking. The Austin Rivers drafted at 10, whatever.
Yeah.
But you know, we were on this podcast about a week ago, and we talked about all the small forwards like we had to do. We talked about four guys that weren't small forwards. And two of them are on the Pelicans right now in Russ Smith, the only guard we really talked about, and Patrick Young, who they signed after the draft. And, you know, to me, if you look at the three guys that the Pelicans have added, Russ Smith, Patrick Young, Omer Asik, at the very least, you've got to say that, you know, toughness and defense are at the core of what all three of those guys bring. I think Russ Smith could just be a dog. You watch some of the videos of him just picking up Michael Carter Williams or Shabazz Napier full court.
I got to say, if you watch that Draft Express video that's in our post about when we drafted or when we traded for Russ, that every single awesome play you see in there, maybe that's a little exaggeration, 80% of the awesome plays you'll see from Russ is him just making Michael Carter Williams look like a schmuck. It is the funniest thing in the world. I enjoyed it no end.
And he destroyed Napier, who I look at the two profiles, similar size guys, similar in offense and one is just a dog on defense, I have no clue why Napier is this first round prospect coveted by LeBron, and you know Russ Smith goes to the second round. But you know, I'm not going to get all bent out of shape and hand him our backup point guard job tomorrow. But when it's him versus Pierre Jackson, just one-on-one, the better fit for this team, I don't think it's even close. You have the same kind of explosive scoring, but on one end, you have a guy that Monty could throw in for a three-minute stretch, tell him to pick up the opposing point guard full court, and just create nightmares on that end for the guy. I think you got to look at it as which guy fits this team better, and to me, it's not even close between Russ Smith and Pierre Jackson.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And you know, actually, watching Russ reminds me of, though, and I was actually thinking about this last year when I saw him play. He reminds me of Brandon Jennings.
Whoa.
And a lot of people are probably, like, recoiling in horror. But he has the same quickness and, like, the way he just moves and... Even to the point of, you know, Russ takes really stupid shots sometimes. He does, like, these fading to the side shots from mid-range that you're kind of, the whole time you're screaming no. But even, like, the way he takes those shots looks like Brendan Jennings does. But let's take a look at what we're getting. This is a guy who's going to be on the lowest possible NBA scale. And I don't actually think there's a huge difference between him and Brandon Jennings, and Jennings is making $8 million a year.
Yeah, I think, you know, there's different parts of their games that
and Jennings, when he's locked in, when he's actually being driven by someone like Scott Siles, he's a good defender. So
yeah,
I don't know.
Yeah, he length and quick. I mean, yeah, he'll get right up in your chest and defend. I mean, I agree. I think it's a great fit. I think it's a nice hedge of, you know, they probably knew going into this night, look, we're going to have to trade either Austin or Gordon. If we can't move Gordon and it's Austin, it's nice to have another, you know, backup point guard option that could be ready to play as early as next year. So, you know, people are screaming small forward, small forward, small forward. But really, you know, I don't know if you're guaranteed to get a guy better than Darius Miller at that point in the second round. And you're definitely not guaranteed to get a starter. If you have the plan of going out and get a starting small forward, you know, in the next couple of days, I could see that backup point guard being a better value there, you know, where they were in the second round. So I thought it was interesting Pierre went back to Philly. I think Russ Smith is definitely the better guy for this fit. I think once Monty kind of gets his offense under control, he'll just fall in love with the guy on the defensive end. And then, you know, it was funny because I made a post on possible undrafted guys the Pelicans could get and thought Russ Smith could be one of those guys. And then I did a post on early second round picks they could go after, and Patrick Young was on that post and they were kind of flipped. But I think you've got to count Patrick Young as another second round pick, has agreed to join their summer league team, which pretty much gives us the first crack at signing him if we want him. You know, I think he's a guy that could make the roster.
Yeah. Yeah, Patrick could be a... I mean, I'm not going to get excited about Patrick. I understand why people like him. He's pretty tough. He thinks defensively. He's just one of those guys who his production has never been where I need to see it be for me to get excited about him. So maybe he makes a roster, maybe he doesn't, you know, whatever. He's not, if we have to end up making a decision on, you know, waiving Withy so that we have space to sign somebody, well, having Patrick Young as an easy pickup afterwards, that's nice.
Right. How about this? You and I talked a couple of weeks ago about Mark Cuban's philosophy on, if you're going to have this huge asset, why not, you know, on the things that you're not capped on, spend money to maximize that asset. How about, essentially, we're paying Patrick Young $400,000 a year to be Anthony Davis's personal trainer?
To work out with him? Yeah, Young is cut. That dude knows how to work a gym.
And if you've seen his workout videos, I mean, the guy is an absolute beast. you know, I'd pay $400,000 for him to buddy up to Anthony Davis, get him in the gym, and you know, absolutely get him cut up. To me, that would be worth it for a guy you're about to pay $100 million to in a couple of years.
Right. Now, so you're right. So we've ended up with Patrick Young and Russ Smith. Cause and effect about Russ Smith. We're getting basically it's come out that Roberts was not extended a qualifying offer. Do you think that because they drafted Russ Smith that happened, or do you think that was going to happen anyway?
Oh, that was going to happen the day he reached the starters criteria. you're not going to give him a $3.2 million qualifying offer. I will say this. I wouldn't discount Roberts. I think no matter what, Russ Smith is the third string point guard going into the season. If Rivers is traded, I would say Brian Roberts is brought back. If not, you know, Rivers will be the backup point. One way or the other, it's going to be Drew Holiday, either Rivers or Roberts as the backup point, and then Russ Smith as the third going into the season. I firmly believe that.
Okay. Yeah, I don't disagree. So now let's talk about some other exciting things. I'm sure you've got all kinds of silly things going around in your head.
Oh.
I have actually, I'll admit this. I have stayed up late at night trying to think of ways to make Eric Gordon go away.
What's your possibility? Right now, if I told you it's either going to be Rivers or Gordon, what percentage would you put on each?
Of who's going away?
Which one's traded in the next? Well,
I have to choose between those two because I really honestly believe it's Ryan Anderson.
Okay. And so just between those two because I honestly don't believe it's Ryan Anderson. But
okay, if it's between Rivers and Gordon, I would say it's about a 60% chance it's Rivers.
Yeah, those were my exact odds too. Okay. So
yeah. I mean, I think it's going to – let's just put it this way. Dell is going to have to talk himself into whatever deal he puts Eric Gordon on the table for. He will be able to find palatable Austin River trades. Ones that, you know, whatever you end up putting together to send him out with whatever free agents on our team that we sign a trade, whatever that is going to be, you can find a palatable trade there. Whatever trade he finds that Eric Gordon goes out in, there's going to be at least one piece that you're going to look at and you're going to cringe a little bit at. I firmly believe that. You might be sending out $13 million of Eric Gordon and getting back, you know, $10 million and five of it's perfectly fine salary on a perfectly fine player or multiple players, but five of it's going to be attached to a dog.
Like a literal dog.
Yes, like, right. Yeah, you're going to get a St. Bernard for
like
$5 million.
Larry Sanders dogs. Now,
probably doing them a favor.
Yeah, big time. I would take those dogs. Now, before we get to Gordon, I mean, I think that's interesting what you said. Your gut seems to believe it's Ryan Anderson. Tell me why and tell me what kind of deal you're thinking.
I really think that they're going to actually be combining Ryan Anderson with a couple other players and going out and grabbing two guys. I think they're going to be looking for a little bit more depth. I think they feel that Anthony Davis is going to be absorbing 40 minutes of power forward. They don't really like to play Ryan Anderson at center that much. They did. I don't think they do. They did do it. I mean, I don't think they like to do it. I think they've got Ashik. They're going to run Ashik and Davis as our starting front court, and Ryan Anderson becomes a luxury if you think of him that way. And I just feel like they're going to combine him, and maybe they're going to combine him with Gordon and get back some pieces to try to shore up their defense. It's just that's my gut feeling. And if you throw Anderson into any deal, the quality of what you get back increases tremendously. Because Ryan Anderson is the guy. Like, if you just went out and looked at and you polled most of the teams in the league today and you say, what do you need? What do you need? What do you need? Half those teams will say, I need a real stretch four. And you're not going to get a better one than Ryan Anderson.
Yeah, I think the Pelicans know that. And, I mean, I guess you could call it luxury. I think in some ways you could call it a necessity. I mean, you know, Boris Diaw was a luxury for all season. you know, the entire season for the Spurs, Thiago Splitter as the starter. I mean, Boris had this great playoffs, but you know, he was all right during the season, and he got his minutes, but nothing spectacular. When it came down to those final rounds in the playoff series, both in the Western Conference Finals and in the Finals, they had to change it up because of matchups. I mean, I think we tend to think of our team, but you're not going to match up against all the 29 other teams equally. Some nights you're going to need this, some nights you're going to need that. You know, I think you could look at it as a necessity if you look overall, but if you're talking about, you know, when you're specifically matching up with teams, you can't head, you know, head first into certain teams with AD and Ashiq. It's just, it's not going to be as beneficial. There'll be certain teams that you match up with that you're going to need. It's going to be a necessity to go in a different direction. So, you know, I think in some ways maybe you could view it as a luxury, but if you're really, if your goal is to beat all the 29 other teams, you're not going to be able to do it the same way against everybody. Even the best team in the league this year couldn't do it the same way against everybody. They had to switch it up and try a different tact. I think if you look at it that way, he's as much, I could argue, he's as much of a necessity as he is a luxury.
Okay. I'm not, I feel like Ryan Anderson's going away, and part of it, I think, is just like, I can't help but feel, you know, masochistic, because it's going to hurt me when Ryan Anderson goes away. If he goes, I'm going to be so sad.
And I'm trying to think of, like, I'm trying to figure out, like, what, you know.
If there's a Ryan Anderson trade, and you want to do a podcast, it's going to be painful.
I mean, but not,
we'll probably have to do it,
won't we? In any scenario. I mean, if they got back, I don't know, if they got back Kawhi Leonard, it wouldn't be painful, right? So, like, there's some level of which it's not painful.
Right.
Right, so...
It's true. So, if they get back LeBron James, I'm fine.
Right, so I'm trying to figure out, like, what your level is. Like, if in some way he was gone and Parsons or Hayward was in, would that be terrible?
Hayward, eh.
Hayward, yeah, okay. So, yeah, I guess I'm trying to figure out, like...
So you got to give me back my shooting. That's my whole thing.
Well, there,
I got my shooting, man.
So there was a rumor before the draft. How would you have felt about this?
No.
You don't want that one?
Gerald Green, no.
Gerald Green and a pick wouldn't be enough?
No.
So, but I mean, Gerald, okay.
He's a shooter, and he's a dunker.
2013-14 Gerald Green, if you could guarantee me him, I mean, that guy was... Ryan Anderson at small forward last year.
Yeah, except that he couldn't rebound to save his life or pass or steal or block shots.
So there is, but there is some level. In-
yeah, so I could yeah. get behind Ryan Anderson, but see, you missed like the main point I was putting in there was, I think Ryan Anderson's going to be like bundled with something else to get back two players that aren't going to be quite as good as him. Like, I think they're going to try to get back like another big man and then somebody to play the small forward spot.
Yeah.
And then, and
how would you feel? I mean, how would you feel if then you go and use the MLE on a Channing Frye, a slightly poor man's version? I mean, Ryan Anderson could be replaced theoretically.
He's irreplaceable in my heart, though.
I agree. I think you do not have to worry. My personal opinion is it's Gordon or Rivers. You know, with Rivers, like I said with the numbers, I think it has to be more of just a salary dump. You know, you look at teams that might be interested in him, and, you know, it would have to be him paired with either a Ginza or one of our free agents in some kind of sign and trade. But I could see just dumping him, and then that would allow you to do everything else and keep your MLE. But I am moving towards the... And, maybe just getting optimistic, but, you know, I start to look at some teams and I'm moving towards the possibility that it could be Eric Gordon. And I'm pretty much at the point right now where I'll be disappointed if it's not, because I'm starting to believe in it so much.
All right. So since we just spent a year telling everybody who listens to this podcast that they're complete and utter morons if they think that Eric Gordon is going to be traded. Let's look now. You come up like just throw out one deal, just one deal, and I'm sure you've got more.
Oh, okay.
But one deal you think is completely reasonable on both sides, where Eric Gordon leaves this team.
All right, so I'll start with. I guess I'll eliminate what we talked about before. Sacramento wants Josh Smith. I would see the Pistons very much wanting to get rid of him, especially if and when they bring back Monroe. You know, they get rid of him. They take on Eric Gordon to fill their starting shooting guard spot, and we could either and then we could take on some combination of Jason Terry, Derek Williams,
Thompson.
Yeah. I would rather stay away from Thompson and Landry, but whatever. But we could take on some combination of contracts from Sacramento, or even Detroit could throw another one in there, a Jarepko, a Will Bynum, a Gigi Datome, something like that. But
sell that to me, okay, so I'm Dell Demson. I actually think that Eric Gordon's worth something still. You're making that trade. Like, nothing you said in that makes me feel like my team just got better.
It didn't there, but it did by allowing you to keep the MLE and the Bird rights. So, okay. Like, you've got to look at it that way of, hey, man, if we don't do this deal, we lose all of these other assets. We lose, you know, Luke Babbitt, whatever you might think of him, Withy and Ajinsa. So you can't just think of it of what you're getting back. You're also getting back all those Bird rights, the option on all of our own guys like Withy and Babbitt and the MLE. So that's how I would sell it to you, Mr. Dents.
Okay. So, thank you for selling it to me. All right. So but that's the kind of trade you actually expect is if Eric Gordon goes out, what we're getting back probably aren't particularly useful players, or maybe are useful in a bottom end of the rotation sort of way.
Yeah, I think you look to Milwaukee and the chaos that's going there. If they're really dying to dump Mayo, would they do Mayo and Delfino for Gordon? Or in a dream world, you do Gordon for Mayo, and if you add like Eli and Babbitt, whatever, you could create that trade exception I talked about that would be large enough to just absorb Ashik into the trade exemption. So, you know, something like that. You've got and you've also got two teams that I think will be aggressive in free agency. That what happens if they just strike out? We just saw Atlanta make a deal to dump some room. I don't think it's any secret. My best friend works for the Hawks. There is a guy who used to work with Eric Gordon at Indiana University that's now in their front office. There's somebody else there that worked with him as a physical trainer that both swear by him. What if Atlanta misses out? They've got a big hole at shooting guard. Charlotte, what if they miss out? Would MJ be interested in coming to get Gordon? I think, you know, that's possible. So I think there are a couple of options, but this is where you talked about at the beginning. It's kind of going to depend on those first couple of days and those teams seeing, hey, what can we do? And then and only then, if they strike out, you know, they could come back to Gordon. But if you're Dems and you have a deal that's on the table today, you know, if the Atlanta or Charlotte deal might be better, do you wait on that and risk losing the deal today? I mean, that's going to be the tough game here. If you have OJ Mayo for Gordon on the table today and know that, and Atlanta has told you, hey, look, if we miss out on all our targets, we'll come back and revisit a Gordon for straight up cap space trade. Do you wait on the Milwaukee one and risk them going away? Or do you just take it right then and there and, you know, miss out on the chance of maybe being able to have come back to Atlanta if they struck out 4 or 5 days later? I think that's the real interesting chess game here.
Yeah, I think Mayo would fit in really well in New Orleans because he kind of looks like a beignet now. All puffed up. And
I could use my he plays more like Miracle Whip joke. So
right. Right. Or, you know, just like my stupid friend when we had him on our team. Every time he started scoring, he'd be OJ's Mayo's on a roll.
Oh. All right, I've got two more. Let me get them out.
Okay.
The Indiana Pacers. Let's say Lance Stephenson agrees to some contract somewhere. Indiana's left there. They've now got a hole at shooting guard. Let's say the third team is just signing Lance with straight up cap room. The Pacers say, hey, call him up and say, hey, look, let us do a sign and trade. They sign and trade Lance to that third team. Gordon goes to Indy in this three-way deal, and then the Pelicans just get this exception, or maybe they take on a small contract like Chris Copeland or something like that. But I think that's a possible deal if the Pacers just cool on Lance. Let's say, you know, Atlanta drops him a deal at $14 million for 4 years, and the Pacers say, well, we don't want to do that, but we don't want a huge hole at shooting guard. And if Lance just walks, we don't have any cap room.
Right.
So now they look to us and say, hey, give us Gordon, you know, and I mean, I think that could be something.
What if they insist we take back George Hill?
Ooh, that, man, you just made it really tough. Because
he stank this playoffs. This is a guy who I loved.
Yeah, I guess, I mean, I guess you would do it. He fits the, I mean, he fits the profile. I think a lot of people say the same thing about George Hill, that he could be a really good backup point guard.
Mm-hmm.
You're way overpaying for a backup, but right now we're way overpaying for Gordon. That would be tough. I mean, I would probably end up doing it at the end.
You'd have enough space still.
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, this, you could do everything legally with it, the trade, keep your MLE, do all that stuff. So, I mean, at the end of the day, I would do it, but my dream version of this is, here you go, Indiana, just take Gordon, and, you know, maybe we take back a Chris Copeland or a small little bad contract from that third team that's going to side Lance. So that's my other one. And then the big one, you know, this came from a rumor on Pelicans report, in which a guy that I've had conversations with, he's not an attention seeker, he's never lied. He straight up said he was basically at a dinner with a guy who works with the Pelicans and was told flat out, just kind of in the midst of a conversation, that the Timberwolves have offered Kevin Martin for Eric Gordon.
And so Martin is three years at $7 million, is it? Or is it just 2 years now?
Yeah, for that trade to be legal, no, there's 3 years and about $21 million left.
Okay.
For that trade to be legal, they would have to also attach Alex Shved, Chase Buttinger, Berea, Mabaya Mute, which I want just so you could talk about them, and Corey Brewer. They would have to attach one of those guys. Some of those guys are in one-year deals. Others have 2 years remaining. So obviously I would have my preferences there, but the center point would be based around a Gordon for Martin swap. How would you feel about that?
I'd do that. They have about the same injury situations where each of them are going to miss like 15, 20 games a season, but it's smaller. And Martin's a nice, efficient scorer. I don't see, you know, if you're looking for a guy who's going to give you a nice 28 to 32 minutes a game, he's not any worse defensively than Gordon is. So, yeah.
Yeah, I see it more as a fit thing where right now, if I were to draw up the ideal scenario for Gordon, he's a 22-minute to 26-minute-per-game guy off of our bench. I can't imagine with his comments that he ever willingly takes that role. I think Kevin Martin would. I mean, we saw him come off the bench every single game for OKC last year. For me, it would just be...
And he was underrated there. Like, the fact that he was there allowed them to have, like, players like Reggie Jackson and Thabo even succeed. Because they allowed those guys to be the third or fourth option all the time on the floor, because and that just helps tremendously. They never had to shoulder the burden that they were expected to this year and that they couldn't handle. So I think Martin is a bit of an underrated player. He was overrated for a little while. Now he's underrated again.
Yeah, and he was fantastic in that year as a reserve. We're talking about a 61% true shooting percentage.
Yeah, he's always been a sick scorer,
and
though.
Gordon was fantastic his rookie year. He's never topped 60%, so we're talking about a sick true shooting. But, yeah, you would take any of those. Honestly, I would take any of them. The worst there is probably Chase Buttinger, who you've got to eat two more years of. But
and he's had injury concerns like crazy.
Yeah, I mean,
although 2 years ago I would have loved to have Buttinger.
Yeah, but I mean, I would do any of those if it meant, you know, basically the swap of Gordon for Martin. Yeah, you eat an extra year on the Martin contract, but again, it allows you to keep all of those things that we've talked about numerous times before. Again,
and you're right. I would like to have Bahamut on my team. That's what I call him. So that he was actually on my NBA 2K team I was playing with my buddy. We called him Bahamut because we had no idea how to say his name.
Wow, I love it.
And we like Final Fantasy, where you summon Bahamut, comes in and kills everything.
Oh man, we all just lost. We all just got our virginity back. but yeah, so I mean, again, a rumor coming from a guy who has some credibility, but again. You know, there could be 1,000 deals floating around, and this guy from the Pelicans heard one or heard a possibility of one and misunderstood it. Who knows? But, you know, I thought that was interesting, and it obviously got a lot of people's juices flowing. One thing before, I think we got two more topics. One, we want to talk about, you know, what we're looking for in a small forward. But there's just a couple of things I want to talk about with Ashiq. I've got a ton of questions. I thought we went over this on the last podcast, but just to be really quick, yes, Tom Benson will physically pay him $15 million this year. But.
Well, I think he probably is going to have somebody else carry the bags.
Yeah,
for
I agree.
Him.
Yeah, that's true.
So not physically pay.
Okay.
Literally pay him.
But he will count $8.4 million against the cap. It was a really weird poison pill contract. I could tell you why that's the case. Just trust that that's the case. He will be making $15 million. It will count $8.4 against the cap. Also, the Rockets will be giving us $1.5 million in cash. That has nothing to do with our salary cap number. That right. money does not come off of our cap. That's a cash payment from the Rockets to the Pelicans, essentially to help Benson pay some of that extra money for that balloon payment. Another thing I was asked about a lot is, could the Pelicans sign Ashiq to an extension right away? I mean, he is going to be a free agent after this year. I think a lot of people's fear with the trade is, man, if we give away a first-round pick for a guy who's only here a year, that's terrible. They could give him an extension. The only rule with the extension is that the contract could not total more than 4 years, which would include this upcoming year. So basically, the maximum extension they could give him is 3 years on top of the one he had, but more than anything, I was surprised when we got off the podcast and the stuff I've been reading and seeing the last couple of days. I was really shocked that there wasn't universal love, not just in the national media, but amongst Pelicans fans for this trade. I mean, I was surprised, and I guess I understand some of the arguments, but it's just very hard for me to agree with them, I guess. I mean, were you shocked that, you know, some people didn't love it as much as we did?
Oh, what I was shocked more about was people, like, splitting hairs over protections. It's like, there were actually people, like, drawing, like, if it's a top 10 protected, I love this trade. But if it's 4 to 19, like people are saying, this is the worst trade ever and Dell Demp should be fired.
Right, because the odds of us finishing 4 through 10 are what?
Exactly. We lost half our team to injury this year, and we finished 10th.
Right.
But, I mean, that's not, like, there is, like, such a thing as a fine trade, but, I mean, we ran out onto the floor opening night Greg Steensma as our starting center.
Actually, I think it was Jason Smith, but I get the idea.
Was it Jason Smith?
Yeah, because
Steensma was so bad. So in preseason, it was Steensma.
Yeah.
And then eventually it became Steensma again. But, I mean, this there is no way you can look at this but anything but a major upgrade for the team. There's just no way it can be taken any way than that. And, you know, worrying about that he might be a one-year rental, the Pelicans still own the bird rights. They still have the ability to sign him to extension. If they get him here and they like and he likes it and it works out, they can always work out another contract with him. And nobody's going to come in and swoop in and offer Omer Asik a huge contract. But even if they do, the Pelicans can basically get a chance, if he's happy with them, get a chance to talk to him and make the same offer to him. So I'm not worried about that at all. And it's, I don't know. The national media, I actually understand that more than some of the fan reaction. Because if I'm a fan, I'm just damn happy this team's getting better. But national media, I know what they're all doing. I mean, the national media basically, they have bought into 100% that there are two ways to build an NBA team. And those two ways are gather a whole bunch of assets and trade for superstars, or get a whole bunch of rookies who all turn out amazing, and you're now OKC. And those are the only two ways NBA teams are ever built and succeed. Only way. Which is horse crap.
Right.
And so Dell is in the middle of it, and I'm not going to sit here and say I agree with everything Dell has done. I don't think any of them are terrible, except, well, Eric Gordon's signing. I guess I'll disagree. Eric Gordon's signing was terrible.
Terrible.
Although it wasn't completely 100% terrible when he did it.
Yes, it was.
Not 100% terrible. It was more like 80% terrible.
You and I were on this pod. I hate when people say it's hindsight. You and I were on this podcast begging him not to do anything, not to match this contract, even to sign and trade him to Phoenix for little to nothing. So I don't want to hear it's a hindsight argument. It was so obvious at the time, but okay.
So anyways, he is not following any of those rules. Like, you know, if either people love the analytics crowd and the analytics crowd is out there saying, you must have lots of rookies on low salary contracts if you want to be able to be good in the NBA, because that controls costs. And of course, you know, so now the Pelicans have traded away three of them and we aren't going to have too many rookie contracts. Well, that's crap too, because we have guys on rookie contracts. And if you look at the teams, I actually did this. I was going to write the post, but I decided not to because it's just engaging. No one's going to be swayed by me talking about it. If you look at the 16 teams that were in the playoffs this year, the most rookie contracts of a team that actually had the guys who actually played for their team in the playoffs was three. And all the really good ones had one or two. So it's not that you have to have five or six rookie contracts to make your team competitive because you've controlled costs. You have to have a couple guys. And how many guys right now do the Pelicans have under contract who have rookie contracts? Who would expect to be a top eight player in the playoffs? Two.
Yeah. And the potential for them to be more, I mean, you know.
It's all horse crap. And it's just until Dell actually puts this team into a position where they're seventh in the East or fifth in the East, his way of building a team is garbage.
Right.
And that will be the way it is.
Yeah, until it's the new model, you know. But yeah, and the other thing people could read, I had a little rant in the Patrick Young post. People could read that rant. I won't repeat it. But the other one that really bothers me, the other hypocrisy that bothers me, is if you watch some of the other trades recently, specifically the Dallas trade for Tyson Chandler, right? They get Tyson Chandler and they gave up a couple of picks, second rounders, so nobody cares about that. But they also gave up a guy who was their 2013 first round pick in Shane Larkin. But if you're in 2014 and you gave up a guy who was your 2013 pick, that somehow is not giving up your future or cost-controlled assets, only if you're giving up a 2015 pick. It's just such hypocrisy to me. This idea of the unknown pick is so great, but then the guys who are actually real players on rookie contracts, if we trade them, there's no problem with that. It makes absolutely no sense. The Hawks did it again today with Lucas Nogueira going to Toronto basically just to cut costs.
Mm-hmm.
But nobody's going to have issues with that because it's not a future pick. It's just a pick that they made last year. So it's just, it's just really not well thought out. It's the same exact stuff being regurgitated by the same people. So I agree. I don't even get that worked up about it anymore. I just, I was more surprised that the fan base wasn't absolutely in love. But, you know, if he was a guy who was a 10 on offense and a 7 on defense, I think they would have. It's hard for the casual fan to get excited about the guy who's a 6-7 on offense and a 10 on defense. So
that's true.
So,
and I will guarantee you that we will have game recap posts where probably once every week, maybe every 2 weeks, where somebody will tear a Sheik apart for missing layups, easy layups. It'll happen.
Yeah, or dropping passes, yeah.
And they'll completely miss the fact that he altered like 15 shots on the other side during that game.
I mean, his defense is, like, people were crying that Anthony Davis didn't get on the first or second team all-NBA defense. Omer Asik is infinitely better as a defender than Anthony Davis right now.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it's not close. So, you know, he's an absolutely fantastic defender in almost, I would give him a 10 in pick and roll defense, maybe an 8.5 in post-up defense. There's some things that aren't perfect there. But, I mean, you're looking at a tremendous defender who, you know, his foul rate in Chicago was really high because he knew he wasn't going to play a lot. He was going to play like 10 to 14 minutes a night, so he's more aggressive. Since he came to Houston, and especially in the year where he got 30 minutes a game, he manages to play amazing defense without fouling.
Right.
So,
yep, and his block rate declined slightly as a result, but that's fine. I mean, he's still good blocker, too. So, yeah, I'm excited to see Asik out there.
Okay, so let's move on to the last thing, is that there is a gaping hole on this team, and for the purpose of this, I guess we're going to assume that we're not necessarily going to get, well, I mean, we could do it either way, but I was going to say that, you know, the small forward's not going to come in a trade via Ryan Anderson or whatever, but we could do trades if you want. But I guess you and I, me especially, was just singing the praises of P.J. Tucker as the guy the Pelicans should go after at small forward. This was before Asik, of course. Is P.J. Tucker, in your mind, still among the available guys the best fit, or is that type of player the best kind of fit, or has Omer Asik, has he changed what we should be looking for at small forward?
So I think it reduces, I mean, it makes one of P.J.'s top talents maybe a little less required. But in general, PJ gives exactly what you'd want. A guy who's going to compete on defense, he's going to hit the three, he's going to try really hard out there, and his rebounding numbers, he's a pretty good rebounder. He's not Aminu level, but he's not far from Aminu level. Before, when we didn't know we were going to have the second best rebounder in the NBA the past couple of years on our team, it was even more attractive. And maybe that's not quite as important anymore, but it doesn't matter. The rest of his stuff that he brings is great. And I mean, anybody who's, you know, going to punch Blake Griffin because Griffin does his little cheap shot where he does an elbow drop on you, I'm all in. Griffin's such a punk. Sorry. let's move on.
But I mean, I got to say, and I hope Pelicans fans don't turn on me here, I do laugh at Blake Griffin's commercials. I do think
yeah.
He has good quality comedic timing.
So I am 100% willing to believe that he'd be a perfectly fine person to talk to and hang out with. Same with Chris Paul. And if those guys are playing against me in basketball, A, I would look like a complete schmuck, and B, they would piss me off. I would want to kill them.
And see, I'm that same kind of guy. I'm a pretty nice guy, pretty easygoing. You put me on a basketball court, I mean, like 12% of games, I'm punting the ball. you know, 15% of the time I just won't come down the court because I called the foul and you're going to come back to me. Like, I could be a punk when playing pickup. It's just, it's like over the top. The hat turns around and I flip a switch and I'm somebody else. So I'm willing to forgive Blake and assume he's a decent person too. But, I mean, I guess to the PJ Tucker thing, the thing to me is if you go get PJ Tucker, the pro would be that you've created an identity for yourself. Number one, I ran some very early projections, like factoring in some minutes. This team could easily be the number one defensive rebounding team in the entire NBA if you subtract Gordon, add PJ Tucker and Ashik. Like, you're looking at it was insane. It was nearly an 80% defensive rebound rate, which is...
Yeah, though that's not probably completely accurate because of diminishing returns, but you're right. I mean, you are basically rolling out with three guys who are not just above average at their position, but well above average at their position.
Yeah, I mean, the minutes that Anthony Davis played at power forward, or at least, you know, next to somebody not Ryan Anderson, he greatly out-rebounded the other power forward he was playing against, you know, much differently than he did when he was playing center or playing with Ryan Anderson, depending on who you thought was center. So, yeah, you're looking at, and I mean, not only those three, I mean, I would say Tyreek is an elite two. So you're looking at four guys now who are elite rebounders at their position, and Drew Holiday, who's average to above average. So you could create an identity of maybe the best defensive rebounding team in the NBA, an incredibly tough team, you know, and a defensive, possible defensive juggernaut. You would sacrifice a little bit on the offensive end, obviously, but so you could go all in and just become a 10 in a couple places and leave yourself as a 6 or 7 in a couple other, or you could go for a more offensive minded small forward who is, you know, able to do more things on that side of the ball, is more versatile, and now maybe you don't have anything you're an absolute 10 in, but you're an 8 or 9 everywhere. I think it would be interesting to, you know, kind of debate and look at which strategy would be the way to go.
Yeah. My problem is, though, I'm not really excited about anybody outside of PJ. I mean, I argued for Thabo, but wouldn't be excited if they signed him.
Yeah, I mean, he's kind of the same thing. I'm thinking about more like,
I would be excited if they signed Marvin Williams, just to hear the apoplexy you'd have if, apoplexy. I can't even speak. The apoplexy you would have if you heard that they were signing Marvin Williams. I think your Twitter account would probably light on fire.
Yeah, I'd be pretty upset. What if you could get two of the following instead of Tucker?
Okay.
So, I mean, almost all of them were in our tournament except for one guy. But to me, I think the one that fits the best would be CJ Miles. Just an absolute knockdown three, but he could actually,
he's a little more guard to me.
Yeah, he could take it. But, I mean, he could take it to the basket on the offensive end. And, I mean, he did cover small forward. Richard Jefferson, Caron Butler, Nick Young, and then this guy would be a backup. He would be the second of the two, but you take a shot on a Wes Johnson type. Just a shooter, length, whatever. But, yeah, I mean, there's nothing really that exciting in free agency. But I go to the possible trade market. I'm looking at, like, again, a lot of these guys I wouldn't have considered if, you know, before Ashik, because we need a defensive and rebounding. But if his back checks out okay, I think a guy like Martell Webster's ideal. You could actually bring in a Gallinari now. Damari Carroll would be amazing, in my opinion. Kyle Singler, Chris Middleton, Gerald Green, Jeff Green, Mike Dunleavy, Matt Barnes, Jared Dudley. Like, I think a lot more opens up because you don't need rebounding and defense to be at the top for the guy you bring in. I think there's a lot more options than there were pre-Ashik.
Yeah, but the one thing that's kind of annoying about this particular free agency class is there aren't a lot of really there's no real small forwards in it that you can get super excited about. Next year, I mean, if you go look at the unrestricted list for next year, I'm just kind of, there's name after name on it. And the first time I went and looked at the free agency list on ESPN, and I was accidentally looking in the 2015 column, and I was so excited. And then I was like, but why aren't these in Michael's list of MLE people? And I realized I was looking in the wrong column, and I felt like a schmuck.
So you beat me to it. That was going to be my next question is, if you take the – let's say we could get rid of Eric Gordon or get rid of him for expirings, whatever. You take the core four, and I'll even throw in a Sheik's cap hold. You take those five going into 2015 – you're looking at $47.4 million in cap room taken up. The expected cap is $66.5 million, so you're looking at the ability to get more than $15 million under the cap. Could and would that be part of your strategy of, you know, maybe just taking a stopgap guy for this year and really going big next year to, you know, and if you get rid of a Sheik, you're looking at being, you know, almost 25 to 30 million under the cap. If he walks or you let him go, you could really bring in a superstar. Would that be something that you consider, just grabbing a stopgap guy for this year?
I think that should absolutely be the plan.
So Tucker or stopgap?
Yeah. Absolutely, because you're not going to get another chance to go big in free agency. Not when, as soon as Anthony Davis rolls off of that, you know, cost-controlled contract he's on, he's going straight max. And as soon as you go straight max, you're going to have a whole lot more trouble unless you creatively made sure everybody else's contracts are expiring in a particular summer. And that's not the case at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
Especially when he goes max. And he's, on one hand, I was disappointed that he didn't make any of the NBA teams. I thought that was kind of stupid. But on the other hand, maybe it makes it so he doesn't get a supermax deal.
Yeah.
I think he's going to hit enough All-Stars that he's going to get it anyways.
Yeah.
But, you know, hey, it's something to consider.
Maybe he won't
be able to get as much.
Yeah, I'm not rooting for that though. I'll be cheap elsewhere.
Not on Anthony Davis.
I don't. I'm not going to mess around and hope to be cheap with him. I mean, because the benefit of the supermax is only we could give it to him, so there's no way he would walk away from it.
Right.
So I'm actually kind of rooting for the supermax. We could get into that a little bit, but so that would be your play. It would be, you know, I'm going to try for PJ. If I can't get him, I'm going to look for a stopgap, whether that's on free agency or maybe trade.
Well, I mean, there's a couple guys. I mean, I would look to do a trade for some of those other guys. Like, if I could get Damari Carroll out of Atlanta for a decent amount of money, like nothing real, I'd do that.
Yeah,
and that's fine.
He would be perfect.
Right. There's a couple guys like I could think of that they could fit in some way.
Mike Dunleavy, 1 year deal.
Dunleavy's one of them. I think that I have like five guys on the list, and I'd have to go look at the list again to be able to talk. Maybe we'll probably do that some other time. But there are guys that you could go out there and get, and most of them are expiring next year too. And I would see if I could get my hands on them some way. But if I can't, just bring in Caron Butler for $3 million for a year.
Yeah, I'm a Richard Jefferson over Caron Butler fan, but yeah, I see what you're saying.
Yeah,
go get Richard Jefferson. And like I said, if you could give CJ, if you could get CJ Miles and then Richard Jefferson on a 1 year, CJ Miles on the deal that we said in the MLE tournament, you could just convert him to a backup shooting small forward and it doesn't kill your cap. Something like that. But yeah, I think that's a really interesting play and an alternative where people might not love who we get back at small forward. Here's the other one I'll throw at you. What if I were to say to you, Gordon's gone, starting lineup next year is Tyreek and Drew at guard, AD and Ashik up front, Anthony Morrow is your starting small forward?
I'd be fine with that. I mean, his big weakness is he's not going to help you really on the boards. And he's not a premier defender, though he got better as the season got along. I wouldn't say he got good, but he got better.
I mean, there would be nothing with that lineup offensively, right?
No, offensively, that, I mean, you've basically, well, no, I mean, it's not perfect.
Yeah, Sheik and Tyreek are not perfect.
Right, that's a little, but it's not horrible. I wouldn't expect that to be like a bottom 10 offense. I'd expect that to be 12 or 13 probably. And as soon as you shift, you know, Anderson in for whatever rotation, it's gonna juice up a little bit. So I would expect to be a top 10 offense with that starting lineup as long as Anderson is what your sixth man.
Let me ask you something real quick. You could just answer in 30 seconds or less. Ashik and AD are on the court. Which big man do you think is in the pick and roll, like the actual pick setter, more often?
Ashik.
Okay, I agree. I just wanted to make sure. Yeah, it just makes a lot more sense for him to be in the pick and roll than AD spacing or baseline running. But yeah, okay. So I think those are all, you know, those are all possible options and ways to go. And there's still a chance, again, depending on what happens to Gordon, that there could be one more year to make a super play in.
Well, I hope you're right that Gordon is the one who goes.
Yeah, let's make predictions. Let's go right now. Let's see if we could do the In the Know podcast magic one more time. What is your prediction? Even let's try to make it super creepy for people. Let's even give me a date that it gets Wojo bombed out there. The date that goes down and the deal that we're going to see.
Well, I don't know if I can do the whole deal, but I fully expect that by July 4th, we will hear that Ryan Anderson, along with some other pieces, but not Eric Gordon, are going to be traded and bringing back less salary so that we can bring in Ashik.
And a couple of rotation pieces.
Yeah.
All right. I'm calling. Oh, I'm torn here. My gut is gut and head are going against each other. Okay. I do believe that the Timberwolves thing has some legs, but that was somebody else's rumor and prediction, so I'm going to go with my own. I really believe that one way or another, on July 3rd, I'm going to undercut you. July 3rd, Eric Gordon will be announced that, you know, the first thing we'll hear is that the Detroit Pistons are trading for him. He's somehow going to Detroit in some other ways. Some other kind of contracts are coming here. We find a way to attach Houston to the deal. But long and short of it, Eric Gordon to Detroit, a couple of guys we don't really want on much smaller salaries come here. Ashik comes here. And then, you know, we also use a couple days later, it trickles in that, you know, we've signed this marginal small forward and that marginal small forward. That's how I think it goes down.
Okay.
Just one more thing. I asked people to send in questions. I tried to answer them throughout the podcast. Just want to make sure I didn't miss any. David Mobley asked, how does the Ashik contract work? He's getting paid 15, only counting 8. Hope we explained that to you. Danny D asked, possible validity of the EJ for Kmart rumor. We discussed that, obviously. Mike Smith would be interested in hearing about waiving and stretching Eric Gordon option. Hopefully we explained that well. Brad Laborde, I need you to tell me the scenarios with the Ashik trade and what needs to happen to preserve the MLE. Talked about that. Explain the tax, and Eric Bellard asked to explain the tax in relation to the cap. This year, and Dell addressed this, we do not have to worry about going into the luxury tax. It would be nearly impossible just because, first, the Pelicans have to jump over the cap itself. Then there's another $14 million jump before you get to the tax. Don't worry about that. Jimmy Siegel, if we release Gordon, what will it count against the cap this year and next? I hope we explain that. Timothy Ebarb, this is one that I get a lot of. Chances on Parsons coming to New Orleans, I would say it's less than 0% chance. I would say there's...
I think you're being generous.
There's absolutely no way. Don't waste your time. Houston's not going to allow that to happen. Jacob Johnson, could you explain how the MLE works? Really simple. The MLE is an exception that if you're at, above, or close to the salary cap, it is an exception that allows you to pay a guy a little over $5 million a year for up to $4 million a year. Now, it can be used if you don't use cap room. So I hope that's it's. You know.
Let me correct how you said a little over $5 million a year for up to 4 years.
Yeah, what did I say?
For $5 million a year for up to $4 million a year.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that would make sense. Aside, Brad Adams, aside from Benson not wanting to, why not ship Gordon somewhere and pay, basically pay for the other team? Is there a limit to money traded? Yes, we could only give another team. I mean, this is what Houston did for us. They said, hey, look, we know the Ashik deal is so big. Here's $1.5 million to help pay for it. The most we would be able to send out in a Gordon trade is $3 million. Although this is something that I've thought about too. We could rework the Houston deal where that $1.5 million goes.
Gets rerouted.
Right. So we could send $3 million from us and one.
You're throwing away Mr. Benz's money pretty happily.
I'm though. Just saying it's something like I was even thinking about this when it came to the lottery. I mean, with the draft, if we could have rerouted Houston's money to another team to buy a pick and still had our $3 million. So there's something to think about. And then the last one, we touched on this a little bit. John Weems asked, I'm curious about planning for 80's max deal in a couple of years. Basically next year, we could give him the max extension and it's very unlikely he'd be able to qualify for the Supermax next year because he would need to play in, I believe, he would need to make two different All-NBA, like, third teams or play, I think, in two different – or not play in two – the All-Star games is he would have to start in an All-Star game, right?
Yep.
So,
yep.
Like
– or he'd have to be MVP.
The most likely route is that Anthony Davis gets two All-NBA team berths, right? So, like, even when we give him the extension next year, it would just be for, you know, a normal max amount. And then, like we've seen with Paul George this year, Paul George got his second year on being an all-NBA team, and that's going to shoot him up to the super max. But I've done the rough estimates, and they're rough because – it's going to be 30% of the cap, and we don't know exactly what the cap's going to be. But I think you're looking at about a five-year deal worth – it's going to be between $100 and $110 million at that point with the way the cap's going up. So you're looking at in the 2016-17 season, AD is going to be on the payroll for somewhere between $18 and $20 million.
All right.
So that's why this, you know, next summer's imperative, as Ryan said, next summer is going to be the last year that we likely have a chance to have these pieces in place and go make a move for a big name because the following year, AD's salary is going to jump up about $11 million. So makes an imperative to kind of do that now.
Yep. One last thing, you brought up that little bit about the $1.5 million. I just like have a little fantasy conversation that I had in my head, so I'm going to throw it out there so people will think about it too. I was thinking, where did they settle on like $1.5 million? Because yeah, it's a $15 million balloon payment, and I actually like thought about it, and I could actually see Dell Demps going into, you know, Mickey Loomis's office and say, I want to acquire him. He's going to cost us extra money, and it's not against the cap, but it's straight out, and Loomis coming back and saying, well, that's a lot of money. How much would you pay him if he was wide open, like free agent? And Dell saying, I don't know, 13.5 a year? And he said, well, make sure you get 1.5 back from them.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Because that's not an unreasonable number.
Yeah, I don't think Ashik gets that much next year, but that's something we could talk about. I'm sure plenty of time between now and then, but I think that's a good idea of how it went down. I also think I would bet Dell asked for the three, and because Morey is always thinking about three other possible moves, he wanted to keep some cash, or, you know, possibly buy a pick and, you know, have some money if he wanted to buy a pick the other night. So, I don't know, but it's an interesting transaction. We don't have all the details. Like you said, there might be something that's slightly amended between now and when it actually goes down. So we'll have to wait and see. We don't have a confirmed report of what the protections are. Like I've seen, and I know it's a small detail, but the difference between 4-19 and 4-20 might not be small at the end of the day. I mean, if it's four either way, I mean, either way, this year, the lowest seeded playoff team from the West got the 21st pick. Right. So basically, if things hold to form and next year the East is terrible again, where when they're drafting guys who won't even play this year, then, you know, and possibly losing guys like Melo or whoever, I could see the East being as bad next year. And that might mean all it takes is getting into the playoffs and you keep your pick.
Yep. Yeah, I agree with that. But, you know, Dell needs to be fired because he didn't protect it at the top.
It's been a lot. Great podcast. I enjoyed it. We have a couple interesting days ahead of us.
Yep. And, of course, if any big deal goes down, we will be getting back together to do a podcast to talk about it. And I'm sure we will have so many cool insights that you guys will be waiting for us to post. So thanks for listening to In the Know. And I'm sure we'll be back sometime this week.